Mini episode 1790 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1790. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris coming at you today, and we have one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries with us here. We have him on frequently to talk football throughout the course of the year. Derek Allen coming back on, and we had him on after week one of the NFL season. That's become a little mini tradition of ours the last couple of years of getting a first view of the season, and so today we're going to be taking a look at the stretch run of the 2024 NFL season. And of course, we always like to do with anybody in the fam here is to get some plugs out there for anything that they want. And of course, for Derek, I know that the way always to do that the best is to get the plugs out there for his lovely wife Maya Master, and go check out Chaotic Goodest on Twitter, specifically all of her wit and wisdom, and as somebody who as a successful author who is only getting bigger and better as it goes along here, one of the wise voices, one of the emerging voices of the 2020s. So go check out all of her great work, and go check out what Derek has to say about football right here, right now. Derek, it's a weird kind of a season here. A lot of disjointed elements, it kind of feels like, in some ways. And I don't know. I'm a little bit kind of down on this season. What are your sort of, you know, top-level thoughts on it?
Yeah, no, always glad to be here, Rick. And thanks again for having me on, as always.
Sure.
I am actually enjoying this season.
Okay.
I think there's a lot of interesting narratives going on, and I think that's what makes it fun. And I think you're kind of, in a way, it's almost mirroring what we're seeing in almost, like, I don't want to say politics, but just like the cultural zeitgeist that is
sure.
What the United States is
yeah.
right now. And I think you're seeing the two, what the betting odds would say, and what I think most people would say, the two best teams right now. And then part of the odds-on favorites outside of, you know, the mysticism that's around Kansas City are the Lions and the Bills. And I think that's two scrappy teams, or maybe not scrappy teams as they are today, but scrappy franchises that haven't won it yet. And both those fan bases really want it. So I think what we saw this weekend, or Sunday, may be a preview of the Super Bowl, and I sure hope it is, because I think that's honestly what America would want as well. Two of these fan bases that absolutely have not been there, should be there, and would put, like, really just kind of accentuate this feeling, I think, that's going on in American culture right now. Yeah. Outside of that, yeah, I think a lot of people are enjoying college football this year more
yeah.
than the NFL. I know you were saying that before we jumped on the recording, but and I get it, right? Like,
right.
This is new. College is a new shiny toy this year.
It is.
It's the first year of the 12-team playoff. Like, I don't blame people. I'm watching college more this year.
Yeah.
But I do think the NFL is still very exciting this year because we're seeing these two top teams. And not to get ahead of myself and what we're going to talk about later in this call, but I don't think we're going to see another Kansas City Super Bowl. And if we do, that'll kind of prove the NFL conspiracy theorists right.
It very well might. And it's one of those things where, again, Kansas City has, for the better part of the season, again, Buffalo having kind of caught up to them recently record-wise and then having beaten them head-to-head. But we've been looking at a circumstance here where Kansas City has been at the top more or less by default, again, aside from what Buffalo's doing now, that the AFC, and this is one of these things where the Jaguar Gator 9 channel on YouTube, I recommend it highly, a great football history channel. The guy does some contemporary stuff, too. And I was listening to a live stream a while ago, and he was saying that this is the worst AFC since 2002, which the funny thing is that's the year that the Browns ended up backdooring the playoffs, and that was the hole in the donut there of New England. New England winning the Super Bowl 3 years out of four, but they lost on a tiebreaker to the Butch Davis Browns in 2002. And he said if you go back further, maybe the worst AFC since 1989, ironically, a year where the Browns made the AFC Championship game, and one could say the last truly excellent season of the Browns, which is really, really sad. But and by the way, for what you said before about the Lions and the Bills, it'll be hilarious to me sitting on America's North Coast, right in between, smack dab in between the two cities, which team more people are in this area end up gravy training. At that point in time, my guess is it'll be the Lions because I think there won't quite be the shame in adopting a team from the other conference. But it'll be funny to see how that ends up playing out. But this is a circumstance where it's sort of in Kansas City by default. And I expected at the beginning of the year somebody would rise up to take them out in the end here. I didn't think they would make it to another Super Bowl. Again, there's a reason that the three-peat thing has never really worked in the Super Bowl era. Nobody's been able to pull it off. And what I was looking for, myself and fellow FDH Lounge original dignitary Chris Galloway, we were in the small percentage of people saying, you know who it's going to be? It's going to be the Bengals. Nobody's talking about the Bengals right now. Joe Burrow's coming back. He's going to have a great year. And that's what it's going to be. Well, Joe Burrow came back, had a great year. We had no idea that the defense was just going to be as toilet paper as it has been the whole season. So, you know, that's what basically took them out the mix. But Buffalo, I said all along they were going to win the East. But I said that, you know, again, it's going to be a little bit of a retooling on the fly. And they've done that, you know, more successfully than even I thought it was going to be. The East is weaker than a lot of people thought it was going to be. I knew that my Dolphins were not going to be a serious factor in there. But this is one of these things where in order to truly buy into them, you have to really believe that they've been able to retool on the fly over the last calendar year. And that's where, again, if they play Kansas City in the playoffs, I just think there's a burden of proof based on the last couple of years. And that, call it the hocus pocus with the Chiefs, you could point to any number of things, certainly with the refs over a period of time. But that's where, again, Buffalo's got a lot to prove, even if they're at home, because they had the Chiefs at home last winter and they still choked. And that was arguably a better version of the Bills on paper.
I mean, you really think so? Because I think with Josh Allen, the odds-on favorite to win the MVP. I mean, on paper, if you're talking about who they had, like weapons-wise and everything, then 100%.
Sure.
But how they kind of put this team together that really doesn't have any stars outside of, obviously, Josh Allen. I'd say James Cook's probably a star as a running back, and then besides him, they seem to have a good stable of, you know, backups there as well. But they don't have Diggs anymore. But, I mean, Josh Allen is proving to carry that team, and the defense is playing as well as they should. You're not wrong that Buffalo probably is worse on paper than they were last year, but in an odd way, I see it as a better team. And again, it lends to why these quarterbacks get paid what they do, because Josh Allen's kind of proving it. And we've seen it with other teams as well, but Josh Allen's kind of proving it where you have a superstar quarterback and you have, you know, a decent cast around them, you can do really anything. So, I mean, the East is bad, and that obviously helps Buffalo, but, I mean, I think even if you put Buffalo in the North, which is arguably the best division in the AFC, the only really, really good one, to be honest, I still think, you know, they'd have around the same record that they have.
Very possibly, and I will say about that, and you raise an interesting point here, that Josh Allen alone can raise their ceiling above what it was a year ago, even if the starting 22 may not look quite as good on paper, because I caught a clip of Ross Tucker, I believe he was on with Dan Patrick, and was saying that, and this is a mouthful, that he thinks Josh Allen has the highest ceiling right now of any quarterback he's ever seen. And that obviously, again, we know the sort of Brett Favre-esque downside with him, right? He will make some throws, he will make some turnovers, but that hasn't happened as much this year. And if you're reeling it in, and his point is if you're getting the best of Josh Allen, then he thinks even historically through the course of the NFL, you'd be hard-pressed to find a better quarterback at his peak, which I don't know if I quite agree with that or not, but I certainly respect his opinion, and that is certainly a mouthful. So that leads you to believe that maybe this year might be different for Buffalo. You look at the other teams in the conference that we thought could be in the mix potentially. C.J. Stroud, something of a sophomore slump, it appears to be there. Certainly, having the injury situation, particularly in the wide receiver core, that hasn't shaped up to be what we thought it was going to be at the beginning of the year. For Baltimore, everybody's saying, oh, this is the year that Lamar Jackson's going to actually achieve in the playoffs. But again, you know, get back to us when that actually happens. Pittsburgh appears to have a higher ceiling than usual in the playoffs, which is sort of damning with faint praise because they always have a low ceiling in the playoffs because of how Russell Wilson is playing at quarterback. So you have that in the mix there. You've got Harbaugh and the Chargers sort of lurking on the periphery. But, I mean, do we really think that any of these teams are necessarily big threats to the Chiefs and to the Bills making it to the AFC Championship game?
Largely, no. I mean, I do agree. I mean, honestly, the AFC is really a five-horse race. Like, Kansas City, Buffalo, Pittsburgh, which really, I mean, Pittsburgh only just by merit of their record, Houston and Baltimore. But I agree with the rest of your sentiment. I do think that in reality, it probably is more of a three-horse race. I think Houston and Pittsburgh have enough of complete teams to do something. I don't think either, but Stroud, yeah, he's having that sophomore slump, so I don't know. But Stroud, at his best, can hang in there, I think, with Allen and Mahomes and Lamar, but with how he is this year, he's not his best. So I see a struggle there. But Pittsburgh, I mean, Russell Wilson is really just being a game manager. I honestly think they were better with Fields. I think it was a more dynamic offense. Granted, obviously, like, you know, their record is what they are. I think they've won, seven?
Yeah.
They've gone 7-1 since he took it from Fields. But, I mean, Pittsburgh will maybe make it out of the wild card, and that's about it in my assessment. I do think it's a more complete team, but I think you need that X factor, that quarterback to really win in the playoffs. So I really don't see them making it beyond that.
Yeah.
Houston, again, depends on what kind of Stroud we get in the playoffs. Maybe he shows back up and becomes kind of what we saw in the most of last season. But, you know, the sophomore slump's real. We've seen it time and time and again. So I guess in reality, you know, it probably is more of a three horse race. Baltimore's really perplexed me because I think Lamar is playing. I think Lamar is having the best season of his career. And I think the Derrick Henry addition was huge.
Yes.
But their record just isn't reflecting it. And they have not won a game against a good team. They've lost to Kansas City. They've lost to Philadelphia. They've lost to Pittsburgh, I believe.
Yeah.
So I mean, they've struggled against the in the important games. So that kind of hurts what I think would help them in the playoffs. But again, I do think a great quarterback can carry you through the playoffs. So like, and all it takes, you know, I'll keep going back. If Eli Manning managed to win a Super Bowl, in fact, he won two Super Bowls. I think anyone can do it if they have a good run in the playoffs. Granted, he had a good supporting cast. He obviously had a great defense around him. So, I mean, I know there's some nuance there. But I do think Baltimore is in it. But in actuality, yeah, it most likely is either going to be Buffalo or Kansas City. I do think Buffalo is the best team in the conference by a million. But obviously, Mahomes is still Mahomes. He's had not what we're accustomed to. He's thrown a lot of interceptions. They've won a lot of close games, some of it luck, some of it the refs, some of it, you know, a myriad of other things. So, I mean, if we're looking at the records, Buffalo is the best team. I don't care that Kansas City has only one loss. Like, it's unfortunate that it's going to come down to one game, and we'll see what happens in that one game, which will most likely be Buffalo and Kansas City for the conference championship. But in all honesty, I do, you know, my heart says Buffalo's going to pull it out. But if Kansas City does, and it's another crazy close game, you know, maybe I'll put my tinfoil hat on. I don't know.
Yeah, I think I probably would too if it comes to that. But I will say also too, to your point before about quarterbacks being able to get it done, some unlikely ones to win a Super Bowl. The year after Eli Manning gets his second Super Bowl, who is it? It's Joe Flacco for Baltimore. So that just kind of reinforces the point a little bit more. He went on the stretch of his life, and that ended up being enough for Baltimore to eke it through in the Super Bowl. I will say the other team to make it in the AFC we haven't talked about yet. There's a coach that is really making me eat my words, because I said coming into this season that Sean Payton was now the second most significant member of his own family, that he had been eclipsed by his smoke show daughter on FanDuel TV. And with all due respect to Megan Payton, I think I was a little bit premature in that. Sean Payton remains the preeminent member of the Payton family at this point in time, at least for another year. Get back to me this time next year. But Bo Nix, I was very dubious of that draft pick. I still don't know how much of a believer I am for the long term, but the way that he has retooled this defense on the fly, and this team is still suffering through the penalties of the Russell Wilson contract and everything like that, somewhat akin to the SMU death penalty of the 1980s, right? But if they're doing that at this point in time, boy, oh boy, could they be dangerous in the next couple of years.
Old man Bo? Yeah, no, 100%. I was just waiting to get to that. I do think that Denver is part of that group, and I think we're going to see the AFC kind of come back and, like, not be, you know, a four-horse race as it's been the last few years. When you see, just like you said, I agree with every single point. I thought Sean Payton was going to be awful, was an awful coach, and just got lucky with Drew Brees. I thought the Bo Nix pick was insane and terrible, and I was proven wrong. And hats off to both Payton and that front office that somehow saw what everyone else didn't seem to see, because they are absolutely putting it together. And, you know, maybe they'll make a wild card, but if they don't, I wouldn't worry, because, yeah, they're still going to be suffering, you know, like you said, some of that cap injury from the Russell Wilson trade. But Denver is on the come up, and I think you also see that with a few other teams in the AFC. I think what Harbaugh's already doing, granted, he came into a pretty good situation. You know, they had a good team that just never seemed able to be able to do much. But I think Harbaugh clearly was what that team needed. They needed some sort of structure, or whatever you want to call it, to get things going. But the Chargers, I think, would probably be going into next year, would probably be my dark horse. And then, yeah, I mean, Indianapolis, I don't know, but Richardson's got it, but there's obviously some, Richardson's got it skill wise. I don't know what he's got going on in his head with that, you know, wanting, like, jumping out of that game. But, you know, they're still there. Miami still has a good team on paper. Don't know what will happen to it. I'm assuming we probably got maybe a year or two left of the I'm blanking on his name, but that coach's show.
McDaniel, yeah.
McDaniel, yeah. I mean, I do love McDaniel, but yeah, he's not having, he just hasn't done much. And I think that office will probably give him maybe a year or two more. I don't know, with what they've had on paper and just not been able to achieve. Cleveland, obviously they're another one that, you know, probably has it on paper, but they made this bed. They got to lie in it till this whole Deshaun thing works itself out.
Yeah.
I don't know why Jacksonville still has not been able to get it together. I do think Trevor Lawrence is not as bad as the record and, you know, his performance says. I think he could stand up there with some of the other guys, but they just haven't put it together. But the AFC is interesting. I think New England's scrappy. I think Vegas is scrappy. Tennessee, maybe get them a better quarterback. Tennessee and the Jets and Cleveland, by virtue of the Deshaun situation, are probably in in NFL hell for a while. But
yeah,
I think in a year we'll see the AFC look a lot more parity, and I think in 2 years we should see the AFC look a lot more like the NFC does this year.
Very possibly, yeah. And I will say that the big gap in production between the conferences has been a shock to me. I did not see this coming, that the NFC was going to be just swamping the AFC, but that is how it's played out. And I will say that in looking at a couple of these teams here, like you were saying, yeah, it is a situation where, you know, the Browns are certainly a cautionary tale as far as bad contracts and bad everything else, everything around the Deshaun Watson thing, an epic fail on every level. Some of us tried to tell them that ahead of time, but no. But that's where, again, the AFC, and that's one of the things, too, when I make a macro critique of the season, as we go to the NFC in a second here, but, like, one of my sort of grumbles about the season is that, like, that it's been the flameouts that have been the biggest stories, I think. I mean, you could say maybe, okay, the rise of Detroit to being a really colorful, you know, really great team as well as colorful, but, like, Cleveland, the Jets, the Giants, well, we know, most of us knew they were going to be bad. A painful thing in your household, the Dallas Cowboys, et cetera, et cetera. Cincinnati with the no defense. Like, to me, some of the most compelling stories of the season are the big failures like this. And it, even Houston, like, they're going to win their division, but, like, this is not the Houston team we expected to see through the course of the season. They're basically, you know, better than everybody else in a bad AFC except for a handful of teams. So that to me has been one of the big stories of the season here, is that, like, the teams taking a big, you know, colorful dump are some of the most compelling sagas of the season, and that doesn't necessarily shape up with a season that we'll be remembering 50 years from now.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I think the most memorable part of the season will ultimately be the playoffs. If we get, you know, if we get something that isn't Kansas City, we're most likely not going to get a repeat of the last couple of years. And we could, I suppose, get a repeat of the Kansas City, Philadelphia with the way both those teams are record-wise. But the way I'm watching them play, I don't see it. And obviously San Francisco is another one that added that list of flameouts you had.
Yep.
But it's, yeah, I mean, the narrative of this season is, you're probably exactly right. It's both the flameouts and I'd add one thing on top of it. I'd say the biggest narrative as well is, you know, the rise of some of these quarterbacks that a lot of us wrote off. And when we get to the NFC, I'm sure we'll talk about them more. But what Darnold's done in Minnesota has been nothing but remarkable, and really is just a captivating, great story that I think a lot of people are going to watch. And obviously, if you go, I mean, we've seen it for the last few years, so this isn't new, but Detroit with what they're doing with Goff and sort of his story, same with Tampa and Baker. Again, these aren't new stories. They were the tales, they were the part of the narratives of last year and even the year before. But I think, I think some of these quote unquote meteoric rises, of these quarterbacks, or rather redemption arcs, is probably a better statement. That's probably been about half the narrative, but I do agree that, yeah, some of these epic flameouts are that we probably didn't see coming are also the second half of the narrative. And it might lend to what you were saying before of why maybe there's a perception that the NFL isn't as, you know, captivating as it has been in previous years.
Yeah. And that's the thing too. And you made the point before, and you're absolutely right about this. Compared to the college football season being everything we knew that it was going to be, everybody that was paying attention knew that it was going to be all of these things with the brand new 12-team playoff, with the mega conferences and the expansion, with the thing. I would say, too, even for those of us who watch a lot of football and are interested in things like this, the fact that the SEC now moves full-time to Disney, and you're watching those games on ABC and ESPN when it would traditionally be the 3:30 spot Eastern time on CBS, that all of the things that college football is giving us compared to what the NFL is giving us this year, I think that's part of it as well. The fact that they're happening at the same point in time, the obvious overlap on the calendar. But I will say also, too, as the original bitter clinger, hashtag, trademark Barack Obama, I guess you would say, the bitter clinger that I am on Jared Goff and Sam Darnold, both of whom I wanted to be drafted by the Browns, okay? I never wavered on either one of those guys. I wanted them drafted by the Browns. The irony is, in between them, I wanted Deshaun Watson drafted by the Browns because none of us knew the scumbag that he was when he was coming out of Clemson. But anyways, and of course...
And Baker. I mean, you guys actually drafted him, but obviously Baker has clearly proven that the Browns made a bad decision.
Yeah, I mean, he won me over after the 2020 season, but I will say, and I guess, and in fairness, after the 2018 season as well. He didn't look great in 2019. I thought he was selfish as hell in 2021, playing the whole year. That team makes the playoffs if they sit him for Case Keenum. That being said, it also was on the front office and the coaching staff and ownership, whoever it was that decided that they weren't going to overrule his judgment and keep him in the lineup. Of course, a lot of it's on them as well. But yes, that's the funny thing here, too, is that so many of the redemption story quarterbacks are quarterbacks that the Browns passed on at one point in time here. And, just one more layer to all of the idiocy you see with that franchise there. The NFC North, you will be glad to hear this, that on the midseason analysis that I did with fellow FDH Lounge dignitary Chris Galloway, I noted how strongly you had put them over when we did our after week one segment. And it was, I think, after I did the thing about a third of the way through the season, the first statistical breakdown that I did, the top four teams in the league at that point in time, after I think week six of the season, in terms of margin of victory, all came from the NFC North. Now, that's a snapshot in time. Obviously, the Bears have receded a bit since then, but this has been a historically strong division. Really, not since I go back to, because again, doing the weekly power rankings that we do on the FDH blog. And I've used this format for some time of adding up the power rankings in the division just to kind of see what the strength of it is. You have to go back to when the NFC West was at its peak in the 2010s to find a division that's as strong as the NFC North has been this year. So, again, I will say it again. I will frame it again. You were absolutely right that they were going to be not just a strong division this year, but they have been historically strong.
I appreciate that because I was absolutely right. And I do. And yeah, the Bears, and to add to it more, the Bears, yes, the Bears are absolutely the little brother of the division this year. But I don't know. I haven't watched much of the talking heads, but from what I've seen, if I'm a Chicago fan, I'm hopeful. And maybe I'm just in a permanent state of hope because I'm a Cardinals fan, but I don't hate what they're doing in Chicago. No. I think I like that they're making Caleb throw it a lot. I think he's playing well. I think and to add to that, them dumping Eberflus after that abysmal clock management, I think that proves that they're done being the laughingstock of the division and one of the laughingstocks of the NFL. So as much as that division is really a three-horse show right now, I still think next year, I think Chicago makes the jump and it becomes a true four-horse show, kind of how we're seeing, how you saw with the NFC West in the 2010s, and kind of how you're seeing with the NFC West this year, in the sense that obviously there isn't a true front runner. But all four of the teams in the West, and obviously I'm a little biased being a Cardinals fan, but all four of the teams in the West, I think this year are around the same parity, and it doesn't reflect the records because again they all play each other twice, and there's been some injuries, yada yada yada. But I mean, it's the fact that the Niners, were one of the best teams, and then they lose McCaffrey, and then the West is just interesting. But yeah, obviously I am proud of my take on the North. I do think Green Bay does perplex me, because I still to this day don't understand how that team is as good as they are from both looking at it on paper and then watching the games. Like, they just it doesn't, it's one of the few teams that just, I can't grasp it. I just don't get how Green Bay is what they are, but regardless, they're a great team. Obviously, Minnesota's had the rise that they've had, and then Detroit being the absolutely kings of the mountain in the NFC that they are. So, I mean, it's the NFC's fun. That's really the biggest difference right now. Is the NFC is just a fun division. Like, you have your two, like, obviously, I think most people thought Detroit was going to come back and have another great year. But Philadelphia sort of having a quote-unquote rise from the ashes, obviously they were never bad. But going back to what we saw them, you know, 2 years ago, that's a fun story. Tampa still clinging along despite their injuries, that's a fun story. The West being an absolute bloodbath is a fun story. So, I mean, I think that going back to what you said, like, what the perspective is or what the perception is of the NFL, like, it's not, it kind of hurts it when you have one half the league is really fun with a lot of great narratives, and the other half is the narrative is, well, a bunch of teams kind of imploded and you have maybe four or five that could have a chance to do something.
Yeah, and I think in looking at the North, it's interesting that you described Green Bay the way that you did, because that kind of feels to me like the way a lot of people are looking at Minnesota. Like, they're still trying to figure out what's going on there. Like, I've seen a little bit of people kind of cooling on them recently, because Darnold is, again, he's had an excellent year, but certainly the first half of it was better than the second half of it has been. So I think everybody's kind of like, oh, they're coming back to earth. Well, first of all, they're still 12-2. Second of all, what I went back to before is these periodic breakdowns, statistical breakdowns that I will do during the season on the FantasyDraftHelp.com website. A lot of this is based off of it. I always give credit to, and I always tell everybody, they should always go look at Pro Football Reference and what they've got there. And I will say, Minnesota remains a statistical darling, because you've got their power ranking figure here, the SRS. At 7.5, they rank as one of the higher teams in the league, and they're one of the only teams in the league that has a positive number on both sides. That 7.5 comes from 3.8 and 3.8, although as I'm looking at the decimals here, there must be some kind of rounding issue, because that would come to 7.7, but it says 7.6, I should say, but it says 7.5. Be that as it may, pretty uncanny that they're equally as strong on both sides of the ball according to this power ranking number. So Minnesota is definitely a team that people are sleeping on. At the one-third point of the season, I was actually picking them to come out of the NFC. I'm not sticking with that, but if they were to be playing on Championship Sunday, I would be anything but shocked. And then you go to the NFC East, where the other contender in there, there's a lot of people that are saying that they think it'll be three NFC North teams in the second round, and Philadelphia. That's certainly, if you look at the records and some of the other metrics, you would not be able to go wrong by making that prediction. Washington has faded a bit during the year, but based on what they did with drafting Jaden Daniels, and with what they've done filling in the rest of the roster, which I noted that they'd had a pretty good offseason. I noted that coming into the season, they've been doing a good job at roster building. Conversely, in the same division, Dallas, which, again, I said this is going to be kind of the worst version of Stars and Scrubs. They've been doing Stars and Scrubs for a long time. That's why they've had the ceiling that they've had. But yeah. I said coming into the season, this was going to be the worst version of that. Lo and behold, you lose some of the stars for a period of time due to injury. You completely neglect the running game coming into the season, and you got what you got. So it's a thing where Philadelphia has been rest of the division. You look at Washington somewhat kind of coming back to earth a little bit after a great start, and you have to kind of wonder how much of that factor is in as far as the surge that that Philly has had. Certainly over the course of the last 2 years, you know, when you look at the stretch run of last year, which was the inverse of this, and what they've done going on this winning streak this season, this is a streaky Eagles team to be sure. So if they can maintain this through the playoffs, obviously, they can win the NFC and maybe even the Super Bowl this time around, making it 2 out of 3 on their recent Super Bowl runs. But then again, they slipped on the banana peel late last season, so they're always capable of that too.
Yeah, and I agree. And I love that you brought up the running back room in Dallas. And I think what you've seen from some of these top teams this year are going to create a large premium on running backs. You see it with all the top teams. You see it where they each have two. I mean, they obviously have multiple, but where the NFL seems to be going, and I'm almost willing to bet on this, where the NFL seems to be going now at the offensive level is that the best teams are going to have two very good running backs that complement each other. You see it in Detroit. You see it in Buffalo. You're seeing it in Philadelphia in a way. You're seeing it in Baltimore. You're seeing a version of it in Arizona. And you're seeing it in Tampa a bit, but you're seeing it in a few different ways. But obviously the biggest notables would be Detroit, Baltimore, and Buffalo, Pittsburgh to a degree, Houston, obviously. Like, there's going to be a run on running backs this year in the draft. I'd almost guarantee it. And I wouldn't be surprised if Genty ends up being a top five pick because of what this season is showing to front offices. Like, and your point about Dallas proves it. Like, even before Dak got hurt,
yeah,
that offense lacked something. And what you just said clearly triggered it in my mind what it was. And it was a true star-studded running game. Like, you need that. What Detroit has done with Gibbs and Montgomery, and obviously Gibbs was a star last year. Montgomery has been very good the last few years. But they did the same thing when they had Gibbs and Swift. The difference is Gibbs and Swift are very similar running backs versus Gibbs and Montgomery absolutely complement each other. And again, you've seen it in Buffalo. You've seen it in a few different teams. So I think that's going to be interesting. And then obviously Saquon just being, you know, a unicorn of running backs has propelled Philadelphia to what they are. The fact that this is the first time I think, at least I remember in recent memory, that a running back has been, you know, in the top four odds wise for MVP. Like, that says something. Like, the running back position has been neglected, and it made sense why it was based on what NFL offenses were doing. They were moving to a more pass first game. Every team was doing it differently, but you saw it was much more pass heavy. But then you see what teams like Detroit are doing. You got to have that. You got, like, the running game just elevates everything else. So I think that's a cool narrative that really you just kind of made me think of that had maybe been in the back of my mind subconsciously, but I hadn't thought of until we just had the conversation. So I think that's going to be really cool of how the next kind of, what the trend of the NFL goes in a few years. And the NFC is obviously primed to go that way. And I think that's why the NFC continues to be, you know, at least for the last few years, why the NFC has continued to stay on top, because they've had that stable of running backs. I mean, between McCaffrey and everyone else you have, you know, there.
Well, and I actually saw a thing earlier this year. Some idiot pundit was calling for the NFL to do away with certain defenses. I think, you know, maybe a variation of the cover two, because, like, oh, it's making the game boring. Well, again, all you got to be able to do is run the football.
Exactly.
If you're going to do that, these things are self-correcting. The game goes through cycles. And it's really been about 20 years since we've been in the cycle of where the lead running backs, the bell cows, were starting to kind of die out. I remember the 05 season really seemed to be right about at the point where that was the case. And then you mentioned Gibbs in Detroit. That was a guy that, admittedly, myself and some other people thought they might have overdrafted him. But nevertheless, he's fit in very well. It is interesting that he works best when he's paired with somebody like Montgomery, but you can't question the impact that he's had there. And then as far as Dallas goes, I'll go a step further on what you said. They haven't had a secondary receiver the whole year to be able to be out there with anybody other than CeeDee Lamb. And this is one of these things where a friend of the show and fellow OU alum Dan McDowell of the Dumb Zone podcast in Dallas there, I am a subscriber to their show. And they do some watch parties on YouTube during the season for Cowboys games, and it is entertaining. I mean, I have no interest in the Cowboys whatsoever, but it's fun watching a room full of people just go through this complete despair and everything like that, and the way that they're cursing the team and everything like that.
You can't keep dumping on them. They're going to, you know, with whatever, you know, Dak got hurt, they're going to have like two, they're going to keep status quo for a couple more years. Yeah. They'll probably make the playoffs next year, maybe win a game, and then do the same. Like, Dallas will, as long as something happens, like a Dak gets hurt, they just hit, Jerry Jones just hits reset on the clock and says, keep everything the way it's going. It's not our fault. Keep doing it. So.
I will say this, though. You look at the mismanagement of the team, and the aforementioned Dan McDowell, a brilliant guy for reasons going beyond him being a fellow Ohio University Bobcat, but he has pointed out that part of the mismanagement is, and again, you look at the amount of cash being put into the team from year to year, that it ends up being lower than certainly than people think it's going to be. These whole things of playing out the string on the contracts all the way through the season, and then you do a big unveiling of a contract right before the season. Number one, it's Trump-style theatrics, apprentice-type stuff to get some headlines. But also, you can say during the off-season, oh, we can't spend money because we still got to wrap up these guys. You wrap them up earlier for what you end up paying them later on, and you have room to sign more guys. So this is a deliberate strategy on their part. Very cynical.
Oh, 100%.
Very cynical. And that's a part that I didn't know until I was listening to their show. And that's I always say a lot of times there's certain insights that you only get from people that are immersed in a market. And I think that's a good example of that right there, because that's not something that I would have observed. Because the rest of the world has the sense that Jerry Jones, say what you will, he spends the money. Yeah, no, not necessarily. Not if you look at the bottom line and everything like that. And that apparently Stephen Jones is now indicating that, like, with Micah Parsons, like, oh, well, you know, we don't want to just be a Stars and Scrubs team and have the couple guys dominating our salary cap. Why stop now, Stephen? That's what you've been the last 30 years. So, you know, letting Micah Parsons go would not be a good place to start on renouncing that strategy. But, yeah, when you look at the rest of the conference here, again, Tampa Bay or Atlanta is basically a coin flip for the right to lose in the first round. The NFC West, yeah, I mean, your Cardinals have been feisty there. The Seahawks, who I went out on a little bit of a limb and predicted to make the playoffs at the beginning of the year, I may yet be right on that one. The Rams, who, again, the one mega Stars and Scrubs team to ever win a Super Bowl as they were in 2021, they're actually better balanced now than they were then, even though they don't have Aaron Donald anymore. Imagine how, you know, the fact that when you actually have draft picks and you're not trading them all away, your first round picks, amazing how you're a little better balanced when that doesn't happen. So there are teams that are going to make the playoff field, but I don't think these are teams that we necessarily would expect to be challenging Philly and probably the Troika from the NFC North when it's all said and done.
No, 100%. And before I kind of jump to that, like the playoff, you know, race point, I do think another fun narrative that has been, look at what we all thought, at least me, I won't attribute this to you yet necessarily, but I thought this was one of the weakest, going into the season, I thought this was one of the weakest quarterback draft classes I've seen in a while. And it looks like it has the potential to be one of the better ones. Obviously, we have not seen Penix or McCarthy because of, you know, one being injured in preseason, one being, you know, obviously meant to sit behind Kirk Cousins, but, you know, to both of them, that could help. We saw. I mean, it clearly worked with Jordan Love. Clearly, it worked with Mahomes sitting behind Smith. Like, the sitting your quarterbacks for a couple seasons clearly is a winning strategy when you just look at recent history and then even a lot of NFL history. But then you look at the guys that have been thrust in there. We obviously have already talked about Bo Nix. We talked briefly about Jane Daniels, but what he's done with Washington this year has been, I think, remarkable. And then, you know, obviously, yeah, the Bears are out of the playoffs, but I'm not out on Caleb Williams. I think he showed a lot of promise, especially for what they put him in. I mean, shoot, they have him some games thrown 50 times a game. I think that's, in any other time, people would say that's insane for a quarterback, and people would say that's, you know, you're dooming your quarterback to a Bryce Young-esque situation. But, I mean, Caleb Williams is showing it. So I think that's going to be this. We could look back in maybe 5 years and say this is one of the best quarterback draft classes ever, especially when we give Penix and McCarthy a shot and they, you know, who knows what they end up doing. But again, based on recent history of sitting quarterbacks, whether obviously the injury is sort of an asterisk, but you know, who knows what could become of them.
Yeah.
But I just think that's super interesting. And I think it's worth, you know, having a quick, wow, we were all very wrong.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. And Drake May, who I didn't necessarily think a whole lot of when he came out.
Yeah, I even forgot about him.
Yeah, right? he's doing excellent for New England. It's not his fault that they suck. It's a roster that just doesn't have a lot of talent there. They need
to
fill.
And Belichick's going to his old alma mater.
Yeah, interestingly enough, yeah. And that, again, that is going to be hilarious. Clearly, he did the right thing going to a non-SEC, a non Big Ten school, because the path to the playoff is a lot easier when you're going there. When we see a subpar Clemson team coming out the ACC this year,
yeah.
Can't blame Belichick for looking at that and licking his chops a little bit. But, you know, yeah, you're right. It's been a very good draft class. I think next year's might actually be a little better than people are thinking. But, you know, it's a little early still on that.
You're high on Shadur?
Not necessarily as much, but I will say the latest guy that I'm a bitter clinger on and who I had been hoping I might end up with the Dolphins, because again, I do believe Tua was one hit away from a drool cup, as much as I hate to say that, and I like him so much, I don't want that to be the case, but it seems inevitable. It truly,
he wants to die out there.
I don't want to see him die out there. Both as
he
some,
wants to, he wants
well,
to.
sure, but like as somebody who, you know.
I don't want to see it either.
I don't want to see it
on the record.
Because I want to see the team succeed, and also on a humanitarian level. So in whatever order, whatever order you prefer, right? I don't want to see it happen, but I'm afraid it's inevitable. The latest guy I'm a bitter clinger on is Quinn Ewers. I actually think that you know,
interesting.
Yeah. I'm not really revising my opinion downward on him under the circumstances here. Now, what I get accused of a lot of times is just believing in the upside of things too much. But that was a thing where, like, Ben Chu, one of our great FDH Lounge dignitaries, has ragged on me for, like, with Jared Goff, the thing that made me fall in love with him was the highlight videos on the deep balls. I'm like, you can't teach a guy to throw like that. So that's still a little bit of how I see Quinn Ewers. But In looking at this here, I know you and I have both said it's likely to come down to Bills and Chiefs in the AFC. In the NFC, I'm going to revise my midseason opinion of Detroit and Minnesota to Detroit and Philly. Notwithstanding the fact that Detroit's defense has not been the same since Hutchinson went down and they've suffered some other injuries along the way, I will still lean towards Detroit in that game. AFC... again, call it, I'll believe it when I see it, but Buffalo, they've burned a couple of us in the betting market the last couple of years. I'll say Kansas City to limp out, and Detroit over Kansas City in the Super Bowl as the dream of a three-peat dies on the biggest stage possible. How do you see it going?
Not that much different, though. I do see, I think the Chiefs lose in either the division or the conference championship, again, unless things are just crazy, but if it's a close game, I think they lose. Again, tinfoil hat is prepped and ready, but I do think that with the way they're playing, I don't know. I think if I'm the NFL, and let's pretend everything is somewhat rigged, or maybe not rigged, but everything is somewhat influenced.
Yeah,
I think it hurts their overall. I think it hurts their overall market revenue, whatever business term you want to throw in, to have a weak Kansas City back in the Super Bowl. As much as they, you know, think that the Taylor Swift boost would help them then, I think the long-term effects wouldn't be great. And I think the narrative, honestly, is probably better if they let Kansas City be, let Kansas City go, you know, for lack of a better term, go back to Kansas City with their tail between their legs, and they, you know, lends towards either towards what I think would most likely be either a Detroit Buffalo Super Bowl or a Philly Buffalo Super Bowl. I think that's honestly what the public would rather see. So I think again, tinfoil hat ready, that's probably what they push for. I wouldn't be surprised if Tampa Bay sneaks in there, but with the injuries, I don't see it. Again, when they were healthy, I think Tampa Bay probably could have done it. They were my dark horse. Minnesota has the potential, but the Cardinals had the chance to beat them. And as much as I love my Cardinals, they're not the best team. So if we're putting you to the screws, I don't know how you're going to do in the playoffs. Granted, I know Cardinals started off hot against Buffalo in the first game of the season, but again, that was the first game of the season. So Minnesota has the chance. Tampa Bay has the chance. That NFC West, I think it's too beaten down to really do anything, no matter who gets there. It looks like Geno's done, or at least if he's not done, he's going to be out for till maybe round one if the Seahawks somehow make it. So I don't see anyone from the NFC West. Tampa's got a shot, but that's kind of really what I see there. Both conferences are probably a two-horse race, maybe a three-horse in the AFC, just because Kansas City is kind of a fake lord in that sense. Like, maybe I'll say Kansas City, Buffalo, Baltimore has a shot, but gun to my head, it's probably Kansas City or Buffalo in the AFC, and it's probably Detroit or Philly in the NFC.
Well, I'll tell you, especially after what you were saying there with Kansas City, I know that we were thinking in this country that we would not be hearing in January of 2025, that we would not be hearing the refrain, "Stop the Steal," this time around, but perhaps we will if Kansas City makes the Super Bowl. Perhaps people will they will be directing that at Roger Goodell this time around rather than the U.S. Capitol. Stop the steal, Roger. And again, I'm cynical enough to believe anything with the NFL. I am somebody who could not possibly be more jaded about Roger Goodell and his dreams of world domination and how he wants to insert the NFL into the crevice of every human being, every orifice on their body five times over. So, the man's lust for money is just otherworldly. I mean, it just makes, Lex Luthor look kind of piddling by comparison. So I'm cynical enough to believe anything and the way that he loves to puff up narratives that he thinks will make them money. But, it would be interesting. And again, if Buffalo took out Kansas City in the AFC Championship game, it's interesting that would fit a historical trajectory here, because you look at San Francisco in 1990 against the Giants. That was really kind of a shocker there. You go back further, a game that I've seen on YouTube from the 76 season of the Raiders and the Steelers. That one may be a little more of a foregone conclusion because of the health of Terry Bradshaw at the time. But these teams that are going for a three-peat end up a lot of times stopping just shy of the Super Bowl. So it would be interesting to see if that ended up being the case again, if it ended up being in the AFC Championship game. But we'll be monitoring that over a period of time, and certainly as we go through continuing to watch football and break it down on the show, it'll be with you also, well into the future here. So, Derek Allen, thank you very much for making time for us today, and may you have a great Christmas and overall holiday season, my friend.
Thank you, Rick.
Appreciate having you, Derek. Thank you so much, and thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1790.